This is the Geek News Central Podcast, bringing you the latest tech and science news, coming to you live from beautiful Honolulu, Hawaii, sponsored in part by GoDaddy.com. Save today at GeekNewsCentral.com/GoDaddy. Fans, strap yourself in for a great show. Geek News Central, the longest-running tech podcast, is ready. It's showtime. Welcome to show 912, this 12th day of December. I'm Todd Cochran, your host. I want to give a warm welcome to the HANA for listeners around the world and viewers around the world. Thanks for being here. Notice a little new start to the show tonight. It is a bit of a change, but I'm sitting here watching YouTube choking on the live stream tonight. I don't know if the stream is going out good or not because I'm getting these status updates that are not good, but... we're live anyway. Everyone, welcome to the show. And I'm just going to get right off into it here this evening. If you're new to the show, we want you to definitely get over to geeknewscentral.com and check out all our content. Of course, we want you to get subscribed to the newsletter and get subscribed to the show while you're over on the website. So all you got to do is go over to geeknewscentral.com to do that. You'll find the links there on the website. Of course, you can reach me very easily on Twitter at Geek News or via email at geeknews@gmail.com. That's the place to go to, you know, that's the way to stay connected with me, and we want to hear your feedback. So definitely email me or Twitter, basically tweet me anytime. If you want to follow us on our G+ community, Facebook and so forth, that'll be within the show notes tonight. You can watch, basically get to all the show notes by going to gncshownotes.com/912. That's where we have all the extensive links to all the articles I'm going to cover tonight. So that's where to go for that. I'm kind of off sequence, you know, with this new beginning. You do a flow of intros for years and you change it up. And I'm like, what am I supposed to say next? My brain is like, you're not supposed to be saying this now. You're supposed to be saying something else. Anyway, it's kind of fun to switch things up. We'll see how this works out. Hey, you can watch the show on the Tech Podcast channel on the Roku, Boxy, Samsung Smart TV, Google TV. Again, the Tech Podcast channel. Get subscribed to that. That way you'll never miss a single episode. You can watch me while you're kicked back in your Lazy Boy or on your second screen in your bedroom, wherever it may be. And they can watch the show there. Well, I tell you, this show, of course, is sponsored in part by our good friends over at GoDaddy. And GoDaddy's been here for a long, long time, but they continue to put together some very incredible deals for the show and for this audience. You can find all those deals over at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. And that 35% off is still working. I checked it just a few minutes ago. As a matter of fact, I bring the website up at GoDaddy, and you can see when it basically says at the top of the website, special offer, save 35% on new products at GoDaddy. I know that the code is still alive. They were supposed to kill the code on Monday. We're not going to say anything about it being up because we want you to be able to continue to use it. So, but again, it could go away at any second. They could all of a sudden realize that, it's still on. Now, I was actually doing some maintenance today. I was going through and looking at all the codes I've had over like the last 18 months, because what I was trying to find was some renewal codes that they have forgotten to shut off. And there was none. They had got through and whack-a-moled all of those, really all of these, codes that were used for renewals. So these percentage off ones, I found some 25% off ones and so forth. Those links will all be in the show notes at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. You can find them there, or actually in the show notes tonight. But we got that $1 per month website builder plus a free domain. It's by using the promo code WSB5. We've got the 30% off, which really that 35% deal is the one to use right now. We got the $1.99.com by using the promo code 199geeks. And for $1.99 per month, you can get economy hosting for 12 months with a free domain. And that promo code is HOSTOFF3. So we've got the website builder. We've got the $1.99 economy hosting for 12 months with a free domain. And again, the $1.99.com. So really some great deals there, along with all the other discounts I've got at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. What else have we got going on here? Looking through my stack of stuff. Shoko's back. She's picked her up at the airport yesterday. So we had get caught up, find out what's going on. And so she's back home and taking charge and getting over her jet lag, which isn't always an issue. So she's back safe and sound. So we're glad to have her back for the Christmas holidays. My mom is actually going to be out here in about 11 days. She's going to come to visit for a few days during Christmas time and then go on with me to Las Vegas. So all that is pending. Also, the Google Glass giveaway. We'll give the Google... I've got three invites again, and we're going to give those three invites away next Monday. So definitely send an email to Sam at insider@geeknewscentral.com. We've got a number of new insiders that are part of the community right now, so we really want you to consider becoming an insider. Really, what that does for us is that... becoming a contributor by contributing $2, $5, $10, $15, or $25 a month really allows us to lessen up the number of advertisers we have and be able to continue to do great things with the show. So I know we've gotten some new insiders. So if you're brand new, definitely send Sam an email so you can get on the all the insider mailing list, the Insider G Plus page, and all that as well. All right. See, looking through my stack here. Hey, pretty much recovered from the crud. It kind of just like disappeared. Still have just a little bit of a lingering cough, but it's much, much better than what it was. So I'm pleased for that to be wrapped up. Hey, this coming Saturday on the new media show, we're going to have Doc Searles. And this is a big, big win for us in getting Doc on. Rob was able to get him booked. He's a pretty known author in the space. And any of you been on the net for a while, you'll know who Doc Searles is. It's going to definitely be a very intriguing discussion. He is out in California. We'll have him on. So it'll be exciting. Again, Friday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern is what time we get started for the new media show this coming Saturday, streamed right here at geeknewscentral.com. All right. Last thing before we get into the tech, and the goal is... And you guys notice we did a little shorter intro tonight. I'm going to be messing with this a little bit in order to try to tighten up the beginning of the show a little bit. And, you know, I think that's been needed. And so we're going to see if we can tighten it up. No promises it's going to work out. But you guys let me know what you think of the new intro. And we're looking for if folks want to do some intros and provide them, hey, send them over. We'll put them in the stream, mix them up, do what you want to do from a theme standpoint. I got some royalty-free music today. That was what was playing in the beginning. Don't know if it quite matches. The timing wasn't 100% there. Tried to keep it within 30 seconds, but we're just going to play around with it and see what happens, have a little fun, mix things up a little bit here. Hey, we want to thank the folks over at Dropcam. You know, Dropcam is, in my opinion, one of the most amazing Wi-Fi cameras available. And this device has an incredible ease and speed of setup. It has accessibility by your mobile device. So I can be on an iPad, I can be on my iPhone, on an Android app or phone, and I can basically have their app and I can see what's going on with the, you know, wherever the camera's pointed at. It's got the two-way talk. So, you know, you can turn on the microphone and you can actually, from your mobile device, talk to the room and the person can talk back. You can hear them. It's got the night vision. It's got Zoom and mobile notifications. And it records the cloud. It's got a DVR service that you can subscribe to that it goes straight to the cloud. You know, this is a perfect nanny cam, a pet cam, security cam for home or even a small business. Price is at $199. But the view, it's 130-degree field of view, and it's really slick. You can really put this thing anywhere. And mine is off tonight because we're having some bandwidth challenges here. So I lessened the load on the bandwidth by removing it from the stack here while we're doing the show, but you'll find the drop cam here at Geek News Central, right on the actual website. Now let's see if I can actually find. Did I have? I thought I had a lower third set up for this. Did I? I guess not. I don't know. Something's happened here. But anyway, you can go over to the website link is bit.ly/tpndrop. bit.ly/tpndrop is where you can go basically get signed up and get a drop cam or just use the link on the website or in the show notes. And we thank you for thinking about picking up a drop cam, supporting this show. All right, let's talk just a little bit here. We got just a couple of days left in the crowdfunding campaign for our CES coverage. I mean, it is very, very close to being done. Just a few days left, and I think we just went over $800 in the total number of crowdfunding donations. It'd be kind of nice to break 1,000 between now and the last day. Consider getting yourself a T-shirt. $25 will get you in the play here. And so anyway, definitely check it out. And thanks for your consideration and helping us out with the crowdfunding. Well, I tell you, YouTube is not happy. It is not happy right now with the service. I don't know what's going on with my bandwidth. Why we're having troubles. I was actually getting a Netgear. I have a Netgear monitoring on my computer, and it basically said high traffic. And I know the kids are not playing any games. They were told to stay off the primary connection. So so something's going on. But anyway, that happens from time to time, and it may be just congestion here in Hawaii or something. All right, so let's move into the tech. Let's see, where are we at time-wise? I just want to kind of get a handle on, let's see here, a wrong button. Okay, not bad. Could be about 2 minutes faster, but it is what it is. And we'll get into the full tech stuff tonight. And, you know, everything's going good here. Just, you know, everyone, I know all of you guys want to know what's happening with the family and everything, but you know, it's kind of same old right now. Kids are doing finals and getting ready to go on the Christmas holiday and everything. So we're looking forward to them being home and being able to harass them on a daily basis. All right, so let's talk just a little bit about YouTube. YouTube has relaxed the restrictions to allow anyone, I mean anyone, to live stream video and or a Google Plus Hangout. This is big. So all YouTube users with a verified account in good standing will very soon be able to stream live footage. YouTube is now, again, rolling out its live streaming capability worldwide after first restricting access to users with 1,000 subscribers in May, then relaxing that limit to 1,000 in August, and now 100 in August, excuse me, and now it's just any account in good standing, and you're going to be good to go to live stream. And some of you are going to be tempted to play with this, but here's just, you know, some suggestions. Number one, stay away from the certified music, basically RIAA music, stuff that you hear on Top 40. Don't be playing that on your live stream. Number two, be very careful about capturing a television screen or anything else that's basically copyright material. Try to make it all original, and you'll stay pretty safe from being not getting your account banned. Knock on wood here. We've had good luck so far here at Geek News Central with our, you know, with our account over there, and have been able to really do. It's pretty amazing. Now tonight they're having challenges. I'm having challenges getting to them, but other than that, no complaints whatsoever. And it might even be them. They might be congested on their side with just opening this up to everyone. But it's big. And it's going to impact folks like Ustream and Livestream. It's a major competition with them, especially considering for free you can take the embed and put it on your website. And that's the big seller for me, was instead of having to pay $400 a month to Livestream to be able to take the embed from Livestream and stick it over in Geek News Central, YouTube allows me to do it for free. So, you know, easy peasy, right? Easy decision. So knock on wood that things continue to roll good. We'll be watching it because I think we're going to be using, well, we haven't decided. We've got a commercial account on Livestream as well for TPN. So we're deciding whether we're going to be on Livestream, if we're going to be on YouTube. I mean, what do you guys think? Which way should we go? Or should we even consider Ustream? Ustream brought us some more, just by their promotion, brought us more audience members to the live stream before. But, you know, it's really, we want to, it stays a nice cozy affair for the show. So we're trying to kind of weigh that. I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts and input on that as well. All right, so let's go ahead and talk about DirecTV. And this is an article over on The Verge. DirecTV is considering streaming video options for basically the millennial cord cutters, the folks that are, you know, like my daughter, who don't have a TV cable connection. She has a Hulu account, a Netflix account, an Amazon Prime account, and one other thing. I think she's got, she might even be using her mom's Netflix account, but it's basically, you know, she uses four or five different services to get her content and is not paying a cable bill. So, but, you know, DirecTV may not have ended up the bidder in the bidding competition for Hulu, but they may be looking an aggressive strategy to, you know, provide DirecTV stuff that comes down via satellite via the internet. You know, they've already got the feeds in, so we'll see. But time will tell on this, on how this. But this is big when they're considering making a, you know, a digital connection be your internet service. You know, if I could pay DirecTV X number of dollars for, you know, the a la carte channels I want, I probably would cancel my, you know, matter of fact, we're already close to cable cutting again, is go back into cable cutting mode. There's just a few things that I like watching on a regular basis, and really doesn't really justify the bill. And I guess once you cut the line, you're just like, well, I'll figure out how to watch it one way or the other, right? So, and you know, a lot of people become a pirate the minute that they cut their cable connection when they can't get shows that they want to watch different ways, or even through the legal ways. So they just go out and find it. But, you know, that's awful dangerous considering how bad I've talked about the RIAA and so forth, the MPAA over the years. They'd be gunning for me. Let's see here. What else? Let me bring up the next article here and try to do a little cleanup on the desktop between. So we're ready to do some flipping back and forth. This is not really tech related, but I thought it was kind of interesting. Another article over on The Verge that some countries, you know, countries especially like Norway, who really, they're kind of landlocked. They have a rising population, and yet they, you know, they just can't produce any more land, and they're having problems with the cemetery. So basically, there's rules in Norway now that you get 2 centuries in the ground before they reuse your cemetery plots. In other words, you're guaranteed 200 years. 200 years in the ground, and then they dig you up, put someone else in your hole. That's some crazy stuff. It really is. There's a basically said in many countries are in the same position, including the United States. Urban planning professor Chris Kautz told Atlantic Cities, this is a website, that of all 76 million Americans expected to die between 2024 and 2042 were to be buried, it would require a 130 square mile parcel of land around the size of Las Vegas. That's how much land it would take to bury us all. And so they're going into the skyscraper mode. All right, we can't put them under the ground. Let's bury them above ground. And, you know, there's crypts and stuff like that that are, I've seen a number of places. They're not real tall. They're a couple of stories usually. But this is like a multi-story building that could go very, very high. You know, I don't think they have this problem in Asia, because cremation is like the number one, you know, the number one burial choice. And, you know, instead of needing a, you know, a 6 foot or 6.5 foot long coffin and, you know, 7 feet of dirt on top of you, you know, they just put you in a vase, you know? And I know some people have religions that are against cremation, and that's, you know, that's their choice. But I don't know why cremation hasn't taken on, why people don't choose that more here in the United States. Traditionally, still people are being buried in coffins. And my wife knows that, you know, put me in the incinerator, then take me out to a field and plow me down. That's that way I fertilize the corn that's growing or something. But that is an interesting dilemma that countries are facing, that they just don't have enough cemeteries. Can you imagine that, being told you can only, that's your plot for 200 years? And then we're going to dig you up? Oh, man. What are they going to do with, you know, how does that, it just doesn't seem like it's right. It really doesn't. Now, I wasn't able to go to this Ford event that happened today, and sadly, I wish I would have been able to go, but Ford has unveiled a self-driving research, basically a self-driving vehicle, and their implementation looks the cleanest I've seen so far, but Ford believes that cars of the future will be able to talk to each other and nearly drive themselves. And of course, today it revealed a major research project that'll help its vehicles get there. An event this afternoon, Ford unveiled the Fusion Hybrid Research Vehicle. It's a modified version of the Fusion Hybrid that's able to drive on its own by detecting the world around it. They use LADAR. He says, our goal is to test the limits of full automation, determine the appropriate levels for near and mid-term deployment. Raj Nair, a vice president at Ford, says in a statement, while Ford says that most of the automation it's testing won't be deployed until after 2025, it intends to phase in pieces of it little by little before then. The Fusion Hybrid included four whirling cylindrical LADAR detectors on its roof, in addition to a 360-degree camera. The sensors work together to visualize the surrounding world and create a 3D map that Ford says is as detailed as some video games. And when they're finally implemented into production vehicles, Ford says they'll be able to reduce traffic congestion, correct driving errors, help avoid collision, and cut down on fuel costs through more efficient driving patterns. So it's pretty good videos from the vehicle, but I think they've really done a nice job in the implementation. And the LADAR, I don't know if the Google vehicles are using LADAR or not, but these just sit there and spin. And but it, I think it looks really good the way they have implemented it. But yeah, I was supposed to be able to go to that event, but I just had too many other conflicting schedules and wasn't able to get away. But there was another announcement that they made as well. They had a hydrogen hybrid. Did I have that link? Oh, I don't. But they had a hydrogen hybrid as well. So pretty exciting stuff in what they're doing there. So we'll see what happens over time. And congratulations to Ford on their announcement. Of course, we know that there's a discussion about bringing the start button back to Windows 8. And people are starting to play around with the conceptual ideas on what that design might look like. Some folks that have been really kind of pushing Windows to be more user-friendly. Internet disconnected. Why is that? We're back online. Something reset. Well, I'm up now. Huh. I don't know why we're having problems tonight. I really don't. I'm very confused on what's going on. But anyway, this user interfaces, I'll have a link up in the show notes. You guys can check out these conceptual designs that that are in work. Also, there's some science out that basically says that some of our above ground nuclear testing that was done in the early 60s is actually producing some results for scientists today that they're pretty happy about. Essentially, when mushroom clouds exploded in the sky during the Cold War era, nuclear bomb testing, they also created an expected boon for service. The nuclear explosions caused a massive uptick in carbon-14. And you guys know carbon-14 is used largely for dating purposes, like a date on a calendar, not dating. The carbon 14 eventually settled in all living tissue, everything from tree rings to elephant tusks to human brain cells. And so now what they've been able to tell in some human testing is when they started looking at certain tissues, they found that fat cells were replaced more quickly in folks that were fat than those in folks that were healthy. When they turned their attention to the brain, they found that some neurons were younger than the individuals they came from, thus showing that the brain can in fact regenerate, a discovery indirectly made possible due to atmospheric effects of nuclear bombs. So this, you know, this carbon 14 dating in biology was, you know, originally all forensic, because they were able to tell how long a body was dead. You know, there's all these variety of things that they're able to use from a forensic standpoint. But now they're just looking at the age of the cells and determining what's going on inside us from a replacement standpoint. So I think this is pretty cool stuff. And this window of testing is going to really kind of close by 2050. And really what that is the testing ban started in 1963. So you figure by 2050, folks will be in their 80s. So the number of folks that will have actually been exposed to carbon 14 will continue to decrease dramatically, and the pool of basically available subjects won't be that great. So they're kind of in a rush, even though 2050 is quite a ways away. Really, in science standpoint, it's not. Gmail has made some changes. How many of you have gotten a Gmail email and basically says, click here to display the image? Well, now what's going to happen is Gmail is going to start caching the image on their servers. And when you load the email, the image is going to come up. It has become a little bit of a discussion point on how that's going to affect the folks that actually track when those images are loaded. Now, for example, when I send out an email blast, we use a service called Mad Mimi. And they allow then when someone clicks on a link, I basically know who clicked on the link from that newsletter. I also know who's opened the email because they load the image up. You know, there's a very, and basically we kind of understand, and it's real basic information. We kind of see what our engagement level is on newsletters that we send out. Now, the newsletters you guys get doesn't have any of that embedded. It's stuff that we do for our company. But so it really allows me see, you know, we got a, you know, 23%, 31%, sometimes as high as 50% of the people that open the emails. And we know because they either click something or the actual graphic they had to click to open it. So we're really, it'll be interesting to see how this affects our mailings that we do, because you know, a lot of people have Gmail accounts. So, but this will make it a lot safer for those of you that are using Gmail to, you know, not be worried about getting a virus or something by clicking on to display images and so forth. So this is pretty cool, and we'll see where this leads. Hey, a little space news. There's a coolant system problem. It's disrupted operations on the International Space Station, a problem with one of the two coolant loops. Now, they've had problems with coolant loops before. Matter of fact, the unit that's giving them trouble was replaced in 2010. The International Space Station forced the crew, this coolant loop issue basically forced the crew to shut down some systems on Wednesday, but does not put the station or the crew in danger. Again, it was one of the pumps on the external coolant loops outside of the space station is malfunctioning. They're doing assessment now of what's going on. They do have spare parts on board. They are going to delay the launch of the Cygnus launch due to the space station cooling problems. And I would almost bet the decision for them to delay the launch of the cargo flight to the International Space Station next week may be partly because maybe they want to put some additional parts on board before they blast off. So they're going to, now they're probably going to push. The Expedition 38 crew is fine, so we'll see what happens here, but we may have another. And this spacewalk required to replace this is not like a one-time spacewalk. It took them three full spacewalks, I think, the last time to replace the pump. So at least they got some experience doing this. It's just kind of disappointing that we continue to see failures of these specific items. But just like anything else, it's mechanical. Something's bound to fail at some point. And, you know, typically there's some valves in there, and I'm sure what's going on is, you know, that valve's doing that. And, you know, just if there's a winding or something that's not perfect with time, it shorts it out and the valve doesn't want to switch anymore. So, anyway, we'll see what happens with the information up at the International Space Station. Whoa, what did I just do? Okay, I know what I did. Let me switch this. Let me see what I, oh, oops, not there. This is a little disappointing. 2 years after Stanford professors drew 160,000 students around the globe to a free online course on artificial intelligence, basically starting what was widely viewed as a revolution in higher education, early results for such large-scale courses are appearing to be very disappointing, forcing a rethinking how college instruction can best use the internet. A study of 1 million users of a massive open online course known as MOOC, released this month by the University of Pennsylvania Graduate School of Education, found that on average, only about half of those who registered for a course ever viewed a lecture, and only about 4% completed the course. Now, I don't know what the whole story is with mocks, but, you know, I did all my education, like 99% of it was online from a computer and in my, you know, basically self-study. And the math stuff, I wish I would have went to the classroom, but I, you know, pushed through sitting at basically at this desk, pulling my hair out. But I just wonder if, because people are getting this for free, that they are not getting as much value out of it. The question is, though, I don't know if they were giving them credits for those actual courses, those mocks, or not. But it's disappointing that they've got this great educational stuff available and such a small percentage of people are actually completing the courses. Again, I don't have the details on whether or not they were getting credits that could be applied toward a degree or not. And so some of these programs have been pulled and the colleges are looking at them to determine what they can do to make it work. So that to me was kind of surprising. It's too bad, it really is. But you think people would jump on this. But, you know, maybe when it comes to people seeing value in something is when they have to pay a little bit. You know, when they have to get their checkbooks out and write for a course, there's more motivation to actually do that. Over in Ars Technica, Arrow is basically telling TV companies, you want a Supreme Court fight? No problem. So, we, of course, don't know if the Supreme Court's going to take it. But, you know, Arrow has won every legal battle since beating the TV companies in federal courts in New York and Boston, as well as a key appeals court twice. Arrow's relied on the landmark 2008 Cablevision case, which ruled that the use of a remote DVR is legal and doesn't constitute a public performance under copyright law. Of course, TV executives are just explosively livid over Arrow and have even made outlandish claims that they may go off the air if Arrow keeps winning. So basically, the TV companies have sent a petition asking the Supreme Court to consider the case. Today, Arrow filed its response, and it took a surprising position. Usually, a company that experiences a total win on appeal, as Arrow did, would want the Supreme Court not to take their case, but Arrow argued the opposite, saying that while the decision at the second court was a spot on, the Supreme Court should go ahead and consider the case as well, because they said every market we're going to go into, we're going to go in a court battle. So so we'll see where this leads, and we'll see if the Supremes take on the case or not. Well, the FCC is moving forward towards allowing calls on airplanes, but another federal agency might just ban them. So this is interesting. The U.S. Department of Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox said his department will consider banning in-flight calls. And I'm going to tell you, I don't want people on the phone in the airplane. I really don't. You know, there's going to be fist fights because you're going to have that knucklehead that sits beside you. It's going to make a call, and he's going to talk, and he's going to talk. He's going to talk loud, and please, we're sitting right there. We can't escape from people. I you know, is and maybe the rule is 2 minutes. That's the limit. You can make a 2-minute call. You know, make it something you know, short enough time where people aren't going to get annoyed. But, you know, how many 2-minute calls can people make? 20, 30, who knows? But that's the only time people get sometimes just disconnect. You know, we already got internet coming onto the airplanes already. So just leave the phone calls alone. Now, finally, U.S. carriers have agreed to unlock customers' phones after pressure from the FCC. So finally, AT&T, Verizon, Wireless, Sprint, T-Mobile, and U.S. Cell have voluntarily committed to unlocking customers' cell phones. Once their contracts have been paid off, the wireless carriers will notify customers when the devices are eligible to be unlocked or automatically unlock devices remotely for free. So this is big. Finally, this took a while to get this. And there's 6 provisions. Each carrier will post on its website its clear and concise and readily accessible policy on postpaid and prepaid mobile wireless device unlocking. And it'll talk about postpaid, prepaid, you give notices, response time, and then basically there's a whole list of provisions are included in this. But this is about time. You know, way, 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 way overdue for sure. Now, many of you have a hard line connection with your cable provider, or maybe you're getting something with a, you know, satellite. But a lot of people in the United States still, excuse me, are not getting great internet connection. But there's a new standard that's been approved. It's a data transmission standard capable of 500 megabits one way and back. So 500 up, 500 down over existing telephone wires. The new standard, G.fast, can be used on phone lines within a 250 meters of a distribution point. So you still have to be pretty close to a distribution point, benefiting fiber to the node deployments. So basically, with telcos not having to build fiber on the proverbial last mile, or really 250 meters, this could bring fiber-like speeds to many more homes. Only 500 megs per second? That's not fiber-like speeds. So the ITU describes G.fast as providing speeds up to 1 gig over existing phone lines, but telecom vendor Huawei notes that reports of G.fast exceeding 1 gig generally refer to the sum of the upstream and downstream bandwidth. So we could see this could come to folks that are, you know, basically don't have an internet connection and still are can get something that's wired. Don't know. Well, I guess it's better than nothing, yeah? YouTube has been killing game clips as publishers basically defend the fan videos. Basically, what they're doing is Google has made changes. Of course, we know all about how Google will really take down content in just about a New York minute. But it's because of the music in the background on these videos. So they're doing playing video games, and the music in the background is often owned by someone else. Maybe the game manufacturer paid a licensing fee, but it didn't give the gamers rights to put it up on the internet. So the content ID scanning system on YouTube is basically are killing a lot of these videos. And some of these folks are really upset because these gaming videos derive a lot of income for those that create them. So I'm just going to tell you, this is not surprising. They're going to have to start killing the audio in order to keep their videos up and online. All right, switching gears here just a little bit. BBC article. Universities have been forced to extend some deadlines because software used to catch plagiarism has stopped working. I guess the some of the anti-cheating software vendors were basically down and out for a couple of days. A company called Turnitin is one of those, said the firm regretted this disruption and that the problems have been now resolved. So basically all these kids are taking finals and stuff and turning papers in for their, you know, their end of the quarter. Professors have had to wait to run those because the scanning software has been down. Not surprising. And that's a big deal now. They use that software pretty heavily. Even in high schools now to catch students that are plagiarizing. All right, article over on Bloomberg Businessweek, and I'm not going to go in too much details here, but it says the Bitcoin Consumer Price Index shows massive deflation. And, of course, if massive deflation is not necessarily a good thing if you're and for any economy. But that's what's happening with the Bitcoin index, and they're saying luckily that's not tied to the dollar, or we'd all be in big trouble. So those of you that follow the CPI and understand that impact, you can read it and you'll get a chuckle out of the article. There's another article on Bloomberg talking about Facebook's newsfeed is suffering from the basically people just liking and sharing junk. And those of you that are on Facebook a lot already know that there's a lot of crap in the newsfeed. And a lot of people are plussing on, cat pictures and, different animations and cartoons. And it's really, some of this stuff is supposed to be viral, but it's not news. It's junk. And Facebook's having major trouble rolling out some of the stuff they've wanted to roll out because the feed is becoming quite distorted. The Anchorman 2 video become more viral and was in more feeds than a discussion about a flu outbreak. So that shouldn't come as any surprise. No one wants to talk about the flu. You know it's out there. But they're having challenges with their newsfeed update. I want to read what my friends and family are doing. And I don't want to read the news. That's why I have, news sites and Feedly and, all the other sources of news. I don't need to get that on Facebook. I really don't. All right, bots are now running the internet with 61% of web traffic. This is an article over on CNET. This is pretty incredible from a standpoint of total numbers. I'm just really quite shocked, to be honest with you, what's going on here. It says 31% of the traffic is search engines and other good bots. 5% are scrapers. 4.5% of the traffic is hacking tools, 0.5% is spammers, and 20.5% is other personators. So in 2012, 49% of the traffic was human and 51% was bot. In 2013, 38.5% was human and 61.5% was bots. And we see this even on our filtering that we have to do for our podcast statistics. We see more and more bots and a lot of bad bots doing stuff that they're not supposed to. And it calls out here that malicious bots or other impersonators, that category has increased by 8%. So the common denominator for these bots is that all of its members are trying to assume someone else's identity. For example, some of these bots use browser user agents while others try to pass as legitimate services. The goal is always the same, to infiltrate their way through website security measures. So on and on and on we go. But it's hard to believe that 30% of the traffic is from malicious bots. It makes you wonder how we're not all hacked and not able to do anything on the net. That's the surprising part. All right, switching gears here. And this was actually, this article is out earlier, but it's been rescinded. Twitter made a change today to their blocking policy. They basically said blocking someone used to mean that we could no longer follow you, but now it means that you can't see their Twitter activity, but they can see yours. So here's the thing. If you have a public Twitter profile, you don't even have to log on to Twitter to see someone's Twitter feed. So if you want to block someone, they're only blocked when they're logged in. They can go to your public profile and see your tweets at any time. But people got all bent out of shape today when Twitter made the change. But again, Twitter's position was that even when someone was blocked, there was no way to stop that person from seeing the blocker's public profile. So long story short here, they changed it late this afternoon. But it really hasn't made a difference because I can still go to twitter.com/ whatever the Twitter name is. And if it's a public listing, see that person's tweets either way. So it's not just, but people just sometimes just flip their mind. They lose their minds over something they don't fully understand. Microsoft apparently starting a new strategy. They're betting on Windows XP disasters. Microsoft today used a practice of predicting next year to drive another nail into Windows XP's coffin. In an 8-item prognostication from several security professionals on its anti-malware and trusted computing teams, Microsoft forecasts an increase in cybercrime that exploits unsupported software. Microsoft's number six prediction put the spotlight and onus on Windows XP. They say this venerable platform, built last century, will not be able to keep pace with attackers, and more Windows XP-based systems will get compromised, prophesies Tim Raines, director of Trustworthy Computing, in a long post to Microsoft's security blog on Thursday. Windows XP isn't quite last century, at least to users. It may be very old in OS terms, but it wasn't released, if you remember, until September 2001. But people love XP. They don't want to move. Companies love XP. It works. Why fix something when it's not broke, right? But this is how Microsoft's trying to get the train moving. So, oh, you're going to get hacked. You know, that's what's going to happen. We will see over time. Now, in Germany, thousands of German users that use a specific website to stream specific adult material have received threatening letters from a local law firm demanding 250 euros or $344 per certain watch clips. Apparently, the Swiss-based firm that owns the content hosted by a adult website has tasked a law firm with collecting fines for each of its shows that was streamed online in the region. Law firms apparently received the go-ahead from a local court, and as many as 10,000 warnings may have been sent to users for stuff that they watched in August. So, boy, imagine getting that bill and explaining that one to the wife. Public Service Commission orders Verizon to cough up cost data on its New York City copper lines. And basically, Verizon did not want to show their costs. And what this was is basically after the hurricane and the Sandy Hook, after all the homes got destroyed last year from the hurricane, Verizon basically came in and said, we don't want to put copper down. We want to turn this whole area into wireless. It doesn't make any sense financially. But the Public Utility Commission basically has ordered Verizon to provide the public with an unredacted cost of information about providing phone service on Fire Island, New York. The directive denied Verizon's request to be exempt from disclosing cost documents. And, of course, Verizon appealing that. So we'll see where this leads. But Verizon doesn't want to show the people what it actually costs to run copper service. So, some people want to be on a hard line still, and Verizon doesn't want to provide it. Article over on Wired, huge credit card counterfeiting ring bought lots of cosmetics. Why do you think they bought a lot of cosmetics? Well, here's why. Cosmetics, they're almost worth their weight in gold. Some cosmetics are, very expensive. Fellas, if you're not examining your wife's credit card bill, you'll know that, or if you are, you'll know that those trips to, stores that carry the cosmetics, that can get kind of crazy. So what they, basically what they were doing is buying stuff so they could refence it and it could demand a pretty high dollar. But the feds have swooped in on a large, well-organized gang of New York credit card counterfeiters. They shuttled mules around the country to buy $2 million worth of gift cards and other goods for resale. Z Zha Q, a.k.a. Superman, allegedly led the ring outside of Do Ki Hong Gong Yong and somewhere. What? Oh, these are people's names. Do Fi Ki, Hong Gang, Yang, and Hu Ming, all from Queens, New York, did this from July until this week. Basically going around and we're using fake burners or using burning machines to create over 1,000 fake credit cards. And the DEA arrested 19 alleged members of the operation in Queens, and people are going to jail. But, if you ever wonder how your credit card gets used, it's because, it gets double swiped someplace and someone sells that credit card number. But buying a lot of cosmetics, anything that you can turn to cash later, that's what they do. Another article on Wired talks about putting your phone in a pouch can make your phone untrackable. Scotty Vest has created the Scotty Vest Blackout pocket. It's a Faraday cage disguised as a pencil case, and it's available in three different sizes. Assuming it works as advertised, a $30 level 2 blackout pocket will prevent you from being tracked and constantly distracted by your mobile device. The pouch, which is lined with an RFID blocking material, supposedly prevents your phone's cellular and GPS antennas from interacting with the outside world. It basically blankets your mobile device in an invisible cloak. The question is, why don't you just turn your phone off? But anyway, that's something that Scotty Design has created. You can have one for $30. The U.S. government has sent a nasty gram and shut down one man Bitcoin. Bitcoin Mint. This is a guy that basically got Bitcoins from Bitcoin owners, digital Bitcoins, and he converted those into Bitcoin coins that had a removable flap with a code that would basically is the same code for their Bitcoin. And but anyway, the feds basically said, hey, this could be used for money laundering. You don't know who's sending you Bitcoins, and you don't know who you're actually sending a physical coin to, so you can't do this. You have to put up some checks and balances and follow a bunch of legal rules. So instead of having waiting to get raided, he has shut down his operation and not going to be offering Bitcoins anymore until after he deals with his lawyer and probably tries to figure out how to do it legally. Some international news. South Korea court has denied Samsung a ban on Apple iPhone and iPad. Samsung lawsuit alleges that iPhone 5 and 4S and second generation iPad infringed on its patents. And basically, they were ruled against in their own country. So this ruling gives Apple a victory in a lawsuit. And so anyway, no more, you know, that kind of puts them down. I'm sure they're going to have to pay Apple some more money for legal cost. We'll see where this leads. Okay, so that gets me through the content tonight. Not too bad. 52 minutes for the show here. And it's a little bit of a slow day from a news standpoint. Let me get on the, see what we have for email that's come in. And don't know if this, you know, I obviously my inclination will be to add a little more content, but I also don't want to make it too short at the beginning of the show that it drives you guys away. So what'd you think of the new intro? And again, I just threw it together and of course used my own voice, but what do you guys think? Do you guys like the snippy fast format today or not? And let's see if I can find the, there we go. There's the comment folder. And again, if you want to be put in the list to get glass, you have to send an email to insider@geeknewscentral.com. I did forward a couple of the emails that came in from folks. I did forward them over to Sam, so he's got those held. Let's see here. Doom, got that already. Got an email here from Richard. Says, hey, Todd. What is this? Oh, I got a late, a Thanksgiving wish. Thanks you, Richard, for that. And DJ, I got your submission. So thank you for that. I want to read what DJ said. He said, hey, Todd, I know you're incredibly busy, so I appreciate your time for reading this. He said, I suffered a C5 spinal injury in 1991, which paralyzed me from the chest down and left me with partial arm movement. Thankfully, I can type without using a hand splint, and I use Microsoft mouse keys to control the mouse. I've done a lot of reading about glass and been doing a bit of research about its features, the GDK APIs and Google's patent on eye tracking. My mind is going 100 miles an hour, wondering about the possibilities for people with physical disabilities to use it for everything from controlling the mouse with the eyes or head to what they call environmental controls. Those are the things like controlling lights, TVs, a thermostat, opening doors, stuff like that. Typically, there are voice activated or controlled via sort of a programmable switchboard. Things like that, along with head controlled mouse systems, are very expensive, clunky as heck, and often need to be used in conjunction with a voice activation software, which only adds to the cost. I'm a programmer, so looking at the API, I can pretty much tell what is and isn't possible. That combined with Google's patent with eye tracking, and he provides me a link, obviously opens up a new realm of possibilities. What I'll probably focus on from a programming standpoint at first is using it to control the mouse. I don't own Glass yet, but I'm planning on getting it once the price drops a bit. So he says, so why am I emailing you? Basically, to get your thoughts. You actually the only one I know that owns Glass. I know you use it a lot. I can't for the life of me determine if Glass currently acts with a PC in any way. Even if this project requires more programmers using hardware from various manufacturers, whatever it takes, I'm sure the funding could be taken care of through a Kickstarter, crowdfunding, private investors, heck, even a government grant. I truly believe, from everything I've read in my programming knowledge, that this will truly revolutionize the way people with disabilities access their computers, their environments, and the world. Please let me know your thoughts, and thanks for a great podcast. I've been a subscriber for 7 years. Phil. Phil, I didn't remember, and I apologize if I didn't realize this. I didn't know you were paralyzed. Thanks for being a listener of the show. I appreciate it. You know, my bout with the, man, I came close, man. It was a L1 for me, and, you know, I'm lucky. I was really, really lucky in my injury. But right now, Glass really does not do anything with the PC. It gets its data connection from a mobile device, and it's actually better to be used with an Android than an iPhone at this point. It still requires a certain amount of manual intervention. You know, I can, if I'm wearing them and I snap my head up, it'll bring up the menu system, and I can actually do the programming calls. I can say, okay, Glass, take a picture. It'll take a picture. I can say, okay, Glass, and I can give it an address. You know, there's a variety of things I can do, but really, it does still require a certain amount of time of touching the side, scrolling back and forth. So I think what's going to happen for folks with disabilities is that they're going to have to get the command set so that you can completely manage this thing, like you said, by moving your head, giving it verbal commands. Sometimes when you're in a noisy environment, the verbal commands are not super effective. So whatever you're going to do, you're going to have to make sure that it can be done through head movement. That's going to be a critical part of this. Now, you need to email me back and let me know if you want me to put you on the list. I know $1,500 is a lot of money to shell out for something like this. And heck, if we had the funds here, I'd buy it for you just to see what you could do with it. But that's really not in my budget at this point. But I think this could be, you know, you're onto something here, and I really had not thought about the usability of it for, you know, folks that are, you know, handicapped and in your situation. So, I think it could be really amazing. Now, the biggest challenge with this thing is still battery life. You know, if you're going to be using this thing on a regular basis, you're going to have to leave it connected. And I told him, I says that, you know, the power is in the wrong spot. You need to have the power in the back somewhere where we can run a cable, you know, to a battery pack on a belt or something, put it behind our shirts, someplace where we can plug it in instead of it's really right there on the side is where the power plug is. So kind of looks kind of dorky having a power plug hanging down your or interchangeable batteries. Now that makes it difficult for folks in your situation manipulating this thing, and I'm sure that, you know, you'll have to have some additional help to do that. You know, I don't know what your full mobility is for your hands, but that would probably be the biggest issue. Now, one thing's good about it is once it sets on your face, as long as you don't bump it, run into a wall, which I've done a couple of times, the glass will work just fine, and you'll be able to see the screen real well. But yeah, I think this could be pretty incredible for folks that are in your circumstance. I was thinking about that a little bit. You know, these folks that are hearing impaired, many folks are going to these cochlear implant, you know, basically it has, and some people are getting some hearing back there, the bone conduction stuff. I don't know how that would work with folks in that situation, but it's definitely some cool stuff, and we'll see where it goes. But thank you for your email. I appreciate it. And And thanks for being a fan here at Geek News Central. All right, folks, we're going to wrap this baby up because I'm going to get out of here. It's actually good timing for me to get done. And hope you liked the new intro, even though I kind of had challenges getting through it at the beginning. But we thank you so much for listening and watching. And until next time, everyone take care. See ya. Aloha.